Hi there, Rachel here. If you're listening to this episode in May of 2024, I have some big news. After selling out during the holiday season, my Flex of Gold journal is available for pre-order right now and will be shipping to your home by the end of June. To celebrate, we're running an amazing pre-order sale for Mother's Day. Purchase the journal before May 13th and you'll get $10 off every journal. This is our best price of the year, even better than Black Friday, so it's the perfect time to stock up for gifts for family and friends. This three-year journal helps mothers to notice, savor, and write down the fleeting golden moments that they experience with their children each day. So go to 3and30podcast.com/flexofgold to reserve your copy, and you'll also see our brand new cover colors, as well as our new cover option, which is a wipeable vegan leather. So again, go to 3and30podcast.com/flexofgold to pre-order your journal, and from now until Mother's Day 2024, they'll be marked down by $10 each. I can't wait for you to experience the magic of this beautiful gratitude journal for mothers. You're listening to 3 and 30 Takeaways for Moms, and this episode is sponsored by Vionic Shoes, wearable well-being for your feet. Pretty much the entire 3 and 30 team is now rocking Vionic Shoes. How cool is that? I've already told you how much I love my Brighton boots and Kimmy slip-on sneakers. I've also told you that my communications manager, Molly, is loving her white Winnie sneakers that go with everything. Well, recently, my director of operations, Christy, purchased the Uptown Loafer in camel leather, and she loved the support and comfort so much that she decided to order a pair of Vionic shoes for her husband. He has the Walk Max lace-up sneaker in gray, and he says they are so comfortable as well. If you or someone you love is in need of a new pair of shoes, all of us at 3 and 30 recommend Vionic. Use code 3and30 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at www.bionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's code 3and30 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. One-time use only, Vionic Shoes, wearable well-being for your feet. Welcome to 3 and 30, a podcast to help you feel more like yourself within your motherhood. Each 30-minute episode features three actionable takeaways to help you become a more self-assured mom, someone who knows yourself, honors your needs, and loves your people. Listen in to feel encouraged as we learn together how to overcome overwhelm and find more magic in motherhood. I'm your host, Rachel Nielsen. I'm so glad you're here. If you have a child who worries a lot or avoids certain social situations or even shows physical signs of panic when facing their fears, you might start to wonder, does my child have diagnosable anxiety? Or is this just part of growing up? And what am I supposed to do to help them? If these questions have ever come to mind for you, you're going to love today's interview with Dr. Terry Bacow, a well-known expert in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and the author of an amazing workbook for teens titled Goodbye Anxiety, A Guided Journal for Overcoming Worry. Dr. Bacow is a Brown University graduate and received her doctorate in clinical psychology from Boston University. There, Dr. Bacow trained under David Barlow at the Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders, widely known for assisting individuals with a range of anxiety and mood disorders. Dr. Bacow is currently seeing clients in person, as well as via telehealth, in her private practice in New York City. She is also the mother of two children. I'm thrilled to have a true expert on this topic on the podcast today, and I want to get right into it. I also want to note that Dr. Bacow shared with me that she is hard of hearing, and a transcript of this discussion will be available by going to 3and30podcast.com/356, which is the episode number, and I'll link that in the show notes. My microphone was also having some issues with feedback the day that we recorded this, so go to 3and30podcast.com/356 if you would rather read the conversation. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with the incredible Dr. Terry Bacow. Terry, welcome to 3 and 30. I am so excited to talk with you today.
I am too. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a personal topic for me because I struggle with anxiety. And just in the last few months, my daughter has started to sort of show some symptoms of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to know how much of that is just normal development and or if it is something to get more support for. We're going to talk about that more in the interview. But it just feels like this is a very timely episode for me personally. And so how cool is it that I have a job where I get to talk to an expert, pick your brain, for something that's going to help me in my own life and then also share it with all of these moms. So I'm just very thrilled to have you here sharing your expertise with us on this topic.
It sounds like the timing is good.
Yes, the timing is very good. So why don't we just jump right in with your first takeaway?
Sure. So my first takeaway is you must validate feelings before you could change behavior. When you have a child who is anxious, they're going to be irrational. And we, even if we are anxious, we might not share kind of what they're coming with. But regardless of that, you really have to acknowledge and validate anxious feeling. And the way that we do that is by letting the child know that we hear them, that we understand. And, you know, not all feelings are warranted or justified, but they're always understandable. So we need to say to our anxious kids, that's so frustrating. You know, this must be really hard for you right now. And to really reflect what they're coming to us with. That's the only way that they're going to calm down enough to be able to work with you to kind of reframe or get out of the situation or be brave.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I actually recently did an episode where I talked about my need for empathy first with my husband. I was talking to a marriage therapist and I told her that I have encouraged my husband, empathy before questions or answers, please. I just need a little validation before we jump to fixing it. And that is so true for our kids as well. Validate, even if the feeling is irrational, before you try to dismiss it, brush it away, solve it for them. I have a daughter that is a little bit resistant to validation of her emotions. It's different than my son. My son has always responded really well to me saying, like, I know what that feels like, or that must be really hard. Whereas my daughter is more like she's annoyed by that when I validate her. She came out of school recently and told me that she had a really bad day. And trying to be a good mom and not jumping to fixing it or asking why, I said, I sometimes have days like that too. And she said, oh, that's so mean, mom. You didn't even ask me what happened. Now I'm not going to tell you. I was like, okay, different kids need different strategies. Yeah. So what do you do if you have a kid that kind of resists you validating their feelings?
Yeah. So let me echo what you just said. Different kids require different approaches. You need to know your kid. And it's okay to test different things out to see what they respond to. And the example you just gave, I think that was so lovely. One little bit of feedback to not make it about us or about you. Mm-hmm. So when you say, oh, I know what that's like, they may feel that it's about you. So you wanted to change the phrasing and say, that sounds awful. Tell me more about that. So that the attention is, and focus is on them. But if it still doesn't resonate, just roll with it. Don't react. And just move on.
Just move on. And I love what you said about you have to try different things for a while to find what works for your specific kid. And you'll have lots of opportunities to try again. So if you try this validation and it's a fail, it's just sort of like information for you. Oh, she really didn't like it that way. But luckily, in about 30 minutes, she'll probably have another big emotion and I can try validating in a different way. So it's just like an ongoing investigation of our kids and figuring out what works for them. Going back to what I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, how do you know when anxious feelings in your kids are just normal versus when they're starting to be something that you need to seek more support about?
Excellent question. Because anxiety could be a normal part of development. I think all kids have fears. Many of them have phobias. Many of them have worries. So at the point at which I think as parents, we might be a little bit concerned is when the anxiety really seems out of proportional or it's frequent, it's intense. You see behavioral changes. You see shifts in mood. And you see impairment in functioning. When the anxiety kind of starts to interfere in your child's life, or even in your life. So if you have a kid, for example, that's coming out of the room multiple times a night, and you're not going to get any sleep, they're not either. So that is an impairment in functioning. And that is a good moment to kind of investigate help.
Yeah. I do feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert in this, that there are certain ages when all kids show a little bit more anxiety because developmentally they're starting to become more aware of their world. And I feel like that's kind of where my daughter is right now. She's 9. She'll be 10 this summer. And I think she's just starting to realize that the world is a lot bigger than she is, that things can happen to loved ones, like loved ones can pass away or get hurt. As our kids grow up, they start to realize that the world is a difficult place. And of course, that's normal to feel some anxiety around that. But I feel like as parents, it can be really difficult and triggering when our kids start to voice some of that and we can worry for them. My daughter recently was crying at bedtime and said, "When you die, I'll never be able to talk to you again." And that just seemed like, wow, that is like a dark thought for a little one. But also, my mother passed away when I was a teenager. My kids know that. So I think she has context to start thinking about what that was like for me. She's starting to feel more empathy for other people. And she's realizing that would be really hard to go through that. But for me, as somebody who's had anxiety, I immediately like go to, oh my gosh, she's inherited my anxiety. I need to get her help. Like, these are really dark thoughts for her to be having. And I sort of catastrophize it versus just taking a step back and saying, I think this is part of the normal feelings of growing up. What are your thoughts on that when you hear that story and just about growing up in general?
Yeah. So in that story, I think as a parent, I would have reacted to that as well. So let me just say, you're not alone. That is an upsetting. And we don't want our kids to be uncomfortable. So I think we react quickly. So I think as parents, we need to tolerate our children's discomfort. It is okay for them from time to time to have a thought or a feeling that's negative. It's not always a cause for alarm. I would be concerned if, let's say, she was saying that day after day. If she brings it up one time, then it's a good opening to have a real dialogue, maybe about death and dying and feelings. And then maybe that's all she needs. But if, let's say, this is something that's coming up day after day, and she's really preoccupied, and she's distracted, then I might be a little bit more concerned.
Yeah. What would you say? Because I didn't know what to say. What would you say if your child said, "When you die, I'll never be able to talk to you again"? How does a parent respond to that?
Yes. Okay, that's a big one. Well, I think that we need to, like I said, going back to takeaway number one, validate, right? So the first thing to say is, that's really scary to think about. It will be sad when we can't talk to each other anymore. However, that's not going to happen for such a long time. And we're going to have so many fun times together before we even need to think about that. So it's kind of reassurance as well as logic. I think it's good to infuse logic and reframing, which is a technique from cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, which is what I do.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break to thank this episode's sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Lumi Deodorant, whole body deodorant that's safe to use anywhere on your body. Lumi is a game-changing whole body deodorant designed by an OBGYN to work not only on pits, but also feet, privates, and everywhere else we get odor. They have all kinds of different deodorant products to fit your preference, cream deodorant you can rub on, solid deodorant sticks for easy application, and even deodorant wipes, which are my personal favorite. Just a quick wipe down and you'll be smelling and feeling fresher than ever. No matter where you use it, Lumi is clinically proven to block odor all day long for up to 72 hours, and the reviews speak for themselves. There's over 275,000 five-star reviews. Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code 3in30 at lumideodorant.com. That's L-U-M-E deodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit lumideodorant.com and use code 3in30. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Today on the show, I'm talking with a psychologist and fellow mother all about anxiety, specifically parenting kids and teens who are experiencing anxiety. Anxiety is what originally led me to start therapy over 10 years ago, and getting guidance from a professional has equipped me with skills that have made all the difference in my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, I recommend trying BetterHelp. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. When my anxiety was at its worst, it made it difficult to go to social gatherings, and it presented challenges in even my closest personal relationships. Are you feeling a lack of connection in your life? It could be from anxiety, depression, or other mental health concerns, and a therapist can help. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/3in30 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/3in30. This episode is sponsored by Kneaders Bakery and Cafe, a taste of home in every bite. You know those restaurants that have so many good memories associated with them that even thinking about them makes you feel good inside? Kneaders is one of those for me. I have a vivid memory of surprising my son's birth parents at Kneaders when we were unexpectedly in town and we joined them for brunch. Noah was about 2 years old at the time, and we all sat together and talked, laughed, and gorged on their famous French toast with whipped cream and strawberries. Whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, Kneaders is always a home run because everything in their cafe is made fresh from scratch. Kneaders has tons of sandwich options, all with scratch-made bread that's baked daily at every Kneaders location. They've got super fresh salads, soups, and incredible desserts. You can't go wrong with the homemade, tasty quality that Kneaders serves, whether you're catering a big event or you just want to grab yourself a tasty lunch. Use code 3in30 for $2 off an entree by using the Kneaders app or through their website through May 15th. When you use that code, they'll know that 3in30 sent you and that we appreciate their support of the show. So go to the Kneaders website or app to place your lunch order. That's Kneaders, and use the discount code 3in30. I do think having a few scripts, or not even scripts, but sort of templates to use when your kids say something upsetting is helpful for parents. So whether it's your kid saying something about death, or it's your kid saying something like, nobody at school likes me, and you want to immediately go to like, oh, that's not true, yes, you know, because you want to fix it. You want to help them feel better. Do you have any scripts or templates for parents, just so maybe if their kid says something to them this week,
yes,
they can pull it out and use it to validate the emotion before fixing it?
Yes. So before I go into the script, I want to share my second takeaway, which is we need to have a poker face. We need to model that we have it together, even if we don't feel the way. And it's not that you can't, as parents, display emotion, but you also don't want to scare your children by making a really, really big deal and giving the anxiety all this attention. And so you want to stay calm, poker face. And then again, you want to validate, you know, it's normal to feel this way. Everyone feels this way from time to time. It's awful to feel that no one likes you. Do you have any evidence or proof that nobody likes you? This is where the challenge comes in. The kind of not to jump to, oh, that's ridiculous. Because never in the history of being told to calm down has someone just calmed down. So I think it's helpful to challenge a little bit and explore where is this coming from? Did something happen? And then to try to problem solve with them around it. Maybe one kid would mean to them and then they feel that nobody likes them. So in that instance, maybe try to kind of come up with a plan for how they're going to manage that situation and to ask them, what do you think about this plan? Because you want it to be collaborative. You want to work with your child and collaborate on a plan. And the last piece is you could also throw in the fact that people don't always have to like us. That it's okay if somebody does not like us because we cannot please everyone every moment of every day.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the truth? Yes. And I think what you spoke to of having our own poker face is so important. And I know in reading through your outline, you talked about modeling calm, brave behavior for your child, even with your own anxieties and your own phobias. So not only in reaction to theirs, but also with your own. And you mentioned that you have a bug phobia. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you manage that around your children?
Yes. So when I say bug phobia, this includes ladybugs and butterflies.
All bugs.
All bugs. Yeah. So if I see a bee, I would be tempted to scream and run away. And I've done that. And then my kid would also scream and run away. And so my husband blames me because they're now afraid of bugs. So I have learned to hold it together and to just pretend to be okay with it. It could be helpful to talk through how we're coping, you know, to say, this scares me, but I'm going to be really brave. I'm going to do some breathing. I'm going to stay in the situation, even though it's hard. I think it's good to model that for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to talk it out for them. So often I think we're doing our own self-coaching, but we're not narrating for our kids kind of what we're doing. And that narrating is an important step to showing them that everybody has fears and these are the tools we're using to face them. So saying like, this bug is really creeping me out right here, but I know it's safe. I know it's not going to hurt me and I'm taking deep breaths. And so they kind of know what you're doing to manage it. I try to involve my kids in a lot of what's going on in my work. I'll let them know if I'm teaching an online class and I'm nervous about it or intimidated. And it's really special that they encourage me and they will say, you can do it, Mom, you know, and then afterwards I'll say, I did it. I was so nervous, but I did it. And I'm so glad I pushed through the fear because that was such a good experience. And then they can celebrate with me. So really narrating our lives and talking to our kids about our emotions can make it easier for them to manage their own.
Absolutely. I think it's good for kids to know that we're human and we make mistakes. And it's also a common aspect of CBT that other people could be so much more objective, right? So a friend comes to you with a worry, you could tell them it's going to be okay. But when they come to you, it's entirely fixed out. So I think it's so lovely that your kids were able to reassure you and that you were able to model for them how it's okay to have negative emotion, and that it's also okay to cope with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think this leads well into your third takeaway, which is really a question about how often do we push our kids? You know, how often do we push them to get through this anxiety? So what is your third takeaway for us?
My third takeaway is to not enable with or collude with avoidance. Anxiety and avoidance a best friend. We need to break up that relationship. And what I mean by that is our kids might frequently be, when they're anxious, try to escape or avoid a situation. It's entirely understandable. They would say, I don't want to go to school today, or the sleepover, please come pick me up. And so my advice really is to try to not let them escape, to try to encourage them to stay in the situation and not leave, essentially, or to go and do the scary thing. And one of my other pieces of advice is we can buddy with them. We could do it with them. We can suggest small incremental steps. You know, maybe you could do part of it, if not the whole thing. Can you stay at the sleepover for just one more hour? You could do it. Because if they avoid, what it ends up doing is just reinforcing and solidifying the anxiety and teaching them they can't do it rather than they can, that it's not going to be so bad.
Yeah, I have heard that when you avoid something that you are afraid of, the fear grows.
Yes.
And that's sort of the concept, I think, behind exposure therapy,
yes,
that you start to slowly expose them to the thing that they're afraid of in manageable small doses, and then you increase it. But I didn't know if that was backed by research or if that was just something that I had heard. So you're saying that it is true that the more you avoid something, the scarier it will become to you.
Absolutely. And the reason this is that when we avoid, our anxiety drops temporarily. But that the next time we do it, it peaks higher because we have the memory of how good that escape felt. And it removed the learning opportunity. And you're absolutely right. Exposure therapy is one of the most evidence-based techniques that we have to treat anxiety and phobia for that reason. Mm-hmm. Because exposing yourself will lead to habituation, which brings the anxiety down. If you could tolerate the spike, the peak, then it would become lower and lower the more you do it.
Yeah. So I have often wondered, with my own anxieties and my own anxious daughter, I also want to teach her to trust herself and to trust her body and to listen to her intuition and to not be a people pleaser who just ignores herself to make other people happy. And so I've sort of had to walk this line between I want, so for example, the children at church always do a primary program once a year. And my daughter is terrified of public speaking. And so all of the children stand up and say a little line. And for most of her life, I have said, you don't have to do that. You know, like, it's okay that you don't want to be a public speaker. And it's been a little uncomfortable for me because I feel like sometimes the church leaders kind of judge me because I don't make her do it. But I'm also like, she's 5 years old. Like, if she doesn't want to stand up and say the sentence, I have encouraged her to be up there on the stand and sing with other children in the group. But if she doesn't want to come up and say her part, I sort of advocate for her and say, she doesn't have to do that. She's really young. It's okay. But then I've wondered, am I enabling that behavior by not forcing her to do the thing that the adults in her life want her to do, but that feels really scary to her? So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are there is a caveat, which is that it is a judgment call. As the parent, we got to decide, you know your child really well, and you know what they're capable of. So there are definitely exceptions. And I always say there is a fine line between avoidance and self-care. So we need to make that judgment. We need to decide, is this avoidance or is this not appropriate? Is this demand too large of a demand for them? And that's a judgment call. And it could be a little tricky to kind of figure out, is this avoidance or is this self-care? But I think as parents, we need to trust ourselves that we know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And the example you gave, at five, I would have pushed. Maybe at six or seven.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, as a success story, I never pushed her to do it. And then last year she decided to do it when she was eight. And so it was almost like she needed to be ready for that, you know? But then another example of where I did push her is she was recently invited by her teacher to do a piano festival. It's her first time ever doing that. And she does have a fear of being in front of people and performing. And so her initial reaction was, I'm not doing that. There was screaming and crying, and I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. And so I took a deep breath and I said, well, let's find out more information first. Because I was trying to decide, do I push her or do I let her off the hook on this one? And so I talked to the teacher and found out. I said, so what exactly is going to happen that day? I think that's important for kids that they know step by step. So the teacher talked her through and said, you'll come, you'll go into a room with one judge. You won't be in front of a big audience. The judge is another piano teacher. She's my friend. She's very nice. And you'll play your two pieces and then you'll leave. So she walked her all through it. And after hearing how it was going to go, I thought, she can do this. If the piano teacher had said, oh, you're going to be up there in front of 100 people, I may have let her opt out. But one person pushing her to overcome this fear. And what's interesting is that when I told her, this is good for you, you're going to do it, and I had resolve, she stopped fighting it so much. I think when she could tell that I was kind of waffling, she was more like, I don't want to do it. But once I said, we're doing this, and I will support you, and I will help you prepare, she kind of stopped fighting it. I said, after the festival, we'll get you your favorite treat, so you have something to look forward to. And the festival just happened last Saturday, and it was the cutest thing, Terry. She was so nervous. She went in. She played her pieces. I was waiting out in the hall with her teacher and a few of other parents that were there for their kids. And I mean, her pieces are like a minute long. So literally after 3 minutes, very short time, she comes busting out of the room. She threw the door open and said, I survived. We all just burst out laughing. All the adults in the hall burst out laughing, and I gave her a huge hug and I said, you did it. You did the hard thing. And so she's building up that muscle, and maybe eventually she will be able to play in front of 100 people. But I had to push her a starting place to start to overcome that anxiety.
100%. There's so many takeaways within that story. You modeled, you know, you had the resolve. You built resilience. You encouraged her to be brave. You found that information, which I think is a great point. It's really important. You made a judgment call and you incentivized. I also want to throw in there that incentives can be good, you know, if they're proportional. And it can be good to incentivize great behavior. Let's get a treat afterwards. That was outstanding. I just love this story. You did and said all of the right things, and I really do think it illustrates so many of the points we're talking about today.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm trying. So it's good to hear a professional say that.
Yeah.
And you have taken your work you do in your office with clients and you've turned it into a book that's sort of a self-paced tool. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. So this book is called Goodbye Anxiety, A Guided Journal for Overcoming Worry, based on evidence-based strategies for anxiety management. The first part is a worry dump section, where kids and teens get an opportunity to write the things that are on their mind with prompts that are curated. I incorporated a lot of pop culture and songs and movies that I thought would be relatable. After this first section, there's an entire section devoted to challenging anxious thoughts, you know, how to identify them, how to challenge them, using these evidence-based strategies from CBT and from other research supported therapies.
Well, what a gift for families that you've created that for the overwhelmed parent that doesn't know where to start with supporting their kid who's showing some signs of anxiety. This is a great place to start, is to get this journal, this workbook. And Terry, I'm so grateful that you came on today and shared your expertise with us and talk. I feel like I got a personal therapy session for myself with my children. And I'm so glad we could bring that to everyone on 3 and 30. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Many thanks to Dr. Terry Bacow for that conversation. And by way of recap, these are her three takeaways for parenting anxious kids and teens. First, validate your child's anxious feelings. Your teen or child won't be able to hear you or move past the moment unless their difficult emotions are first explicitly acknowledged. Remember, anxiety isn't always logical, justified, or warranted, but it is always understandable. Never say, just get over it, or just calm down. Instead, in a soothing tone, take your best guess at how they're feeling and say, I understand you're frightened right now, or this is really hard right now. Then second, model calm, brave behavior for your child. If you are triggered by their big emotions, try not to let on. Stay calm and sturdy, and do not reinforce your child's anxiety with excessive attention. If you yourself are scared of something, try to adopt a poker face so you don't pass that fear on to your children. It's totally fine to talk to them about how you're feeling, but narrate for them what you are doing to cope with your anxieties. I'm feeling a fluttery feeling in my stomach right now because speaking in front of a crowd sometimes feels scary to me, but it's important to me that I push through this, so I'm going to take deep breaths and do it scared. I know I can do this. And third and finally, do not enable or collude with your child's avoidance behaviors. It can be tempting as a parent to allow your child to just escape or avoid situations that make them uncomfortable. But this actually often ends up strengthening and reinforcing the anxiety. Instead, help your child gather the information they need to feel safer in the situation, and then encourage them to do the hard thing with your support and encouragement. Remember that some kids are going to need scaffolding to build their tolerance for certain environments and situations, and that's okay, as long as we're not enabling them to avoid the trigger altogether. And if your child's fear becomes persistent, obsessive, outsized, or disruptive to their functioning or the functioning of the family, seek help from professionals. There is effective treatment for anxiety, and Dr. Bacow suggests cognitive behavioral therapy as a place to start. As a reminder, her book is a fantastic resource, and that's titled Goodbye Anxiety, A Guided Journal for Overcoming Worry. And I also wanted to point you to several other podcast episodes we've had on the show about parenting kids who tend towards worry, including an episode with therapist Ceci Goff, and those will be linked in the show notes for this episode if you'd like to binge on some resources that can help you and your child. As always, my friends, thank you so much for being here. I'm grateful to have this place to connect with you each week, and I hope you have a beautiful week with your family.